actually done that before. I've had some different song leaders in the days of growing up at church in Emmanuel Baptist in Dayton, but never quite did it that way, and that sounded really good. Of course, that church didn't have an orchestra either, but I like that, because the instrument, as they play, they are playing to the glory of God, and it kind of puts that emphasis there, and I thought that was really, really good. Well, you know, this has really been a rough week between the funerals and people in the hospital and everything, so I have to confess to you that I just really didn't have time to work on this message tonight, and so my wife kind of stepped in and she wrote it for me, so let's stand. So let's stand and close in prayer. Oh. Yeah, she didn't know I was going to do that. I heard, that reminded me, I heard some of the people that knew they had another commitment tonight and they weren't going to be able to make it, but I heard the one wife said, well, you didn't need to hear that sermon anyways. She told him that, that I'm okay, you didn't need to hear that. Well, and I've heard others just saying, well, with the wife or the husband, and should we come tonight or we shouldn't, and that was just, so it's one of those things that you really want, the wife should be here just in case her husband comes, just to find out what he does say and make sure that her husband really heard it right. And then the flip side is true, that, as you turn that around. But let me also just start off by saying, so we're taking light here, this will be the beginning of this message. But let me just hasten to say a couple of things that just on this particular message, and it's really one of those kinds of, it's so different than what we did this morning in Gethsemane, gut-wrenching, full of pathos. This is a time when really I'm counseling from the pulpit. And it's one of those things, it's what the Bible addresses, and we believe in biblical exposition. And so this is fitting and proper, but it's extremely practical. And it is truly a marriage counseling or reminding us all of our responsibilities. And so when we come to this, and especially when we're talking about marriage, and we've looked at the institution, we've looked generally at the duties of marriage and the benefits of marriage, and now tonight, what we would say is getting down to brass tacks, we're getting down to the nuts and bolts of what makes for a good marriage and the like, that... In a sense, my heart is so full that, I can't get through it all. We always run the danger of, you take what I say and don't let me finish it until next week or whenever. And so all of a sudden, you make some misapplications. Now, I would trust in the congregation that I have here tonight that that would not happen. But there are some here that there may be areas of some question. There may be some areas of, this is what he said. Wives, submit yourselves into your own husbands, and then so he thinks that the wife is a doormat. No, that is not what we're saying. And so I always have that sense of tension in my heart, but also the sense that there's such a fullness of, I just want to get it all out there. So let me just begin by, while I'm going to be talking a lot about wives, I have a comment about husbands, so that wives, if he starts picking on you this week, just in case that there's some more things next week that I need to say, you just remind him that there is more in the Bible addressed to husbands than there is to wives, okay? And so the fact that he's in bigger trouble because God thought that men needed to hear more of it and that women would pay more attention and so forth. And then also may I just say, and I have followed this and I believe it to be true, that one of the things that we'll be looking at next week is that the husbands love your wives. And I really do believe that right there is the key to marriage. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands. Husbands, love your wives. If you follow that, that is the key to a good marriage. It is what God has ordained. When you flesh that out in daily living, that a husband so loves his wife, and the text that we read this evening was quite clear. He loves his wife like he loves his own body, himself. We take care of ourselves, the guys who want to, be fit and take care of themselves and all that. Well, you need to be able to take care of your wife that way too. That you so love your wife that she doesn't wonder if you love her. She doesn't have to second guess your love for her. She feels so loved that she enjoys submitting to you. And as she submits to you and is your wonderful companion for what she's supposed to be, is what we've seen already in the duties of marriage, that as she is your companion and she's supportive and loving and kind back to you, you just love her more. And as you love her more, she just loves. And you see, that's like the snowball on top of the mountain that starts down. And you, for those of you that grew up in Florida, this illustration just doesn't work. I am so sorry, but it's a good one. That, you know, when the snowball rolls down the side of a hill, that it picks up more snow and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It's the key of how to make a really great snowman. But anyways, you know, you get this really big snowball, round thing here. And if you husbands love your wives, the wife submits, she submits, he loves her more. That snowball in marriage gets bigger and bigger, and it's glorious. But I'll show you one point, and I will say, and this is more ammunition for the women, that one of the biggest problems is that men don't love their wives correctly. And then she ends up with a problem in submitting. And part of his love for her and a love for himself and his love for God is that he's not teaching the right things. And so he lacks love. And so then other things in the world come in and she raises up and, I don't have to submit to you. I got my rights. And then, oh, and then he gets upset and she, you know, and she's going to vote for the very opposite person that you're going to vote for just to spite you. And then it just, and then you end up with problems in the house. I don't want spanking. I do want spanking. And then you end up with tension. And so all of a sudden, the husband doesn't properly in God with godly love love his wife. And she resists submitting. And as she resists to submitting, he doesn't love her that much more. And man, you end up with a major problem. And so that is going to, in our text tonight, those are going to be the two main things. But in marriage, I would put it this way, that if there is a problem, it is first and foremost, not only, but first and foremost, the husband's problem. Now, I don't mean he's the cause of it. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's her. But it's his problem because he's the head of the home, whether he assumes that relationship and that role or not. And if he has a rebellious wife, oh, he's got a problem. Hosea had a problem. He had a major problem. His wife's a prostitute. She's having kids of harlotry, and he's got to raise them. He's got a problem. Now, obviously, and I mean, you know, you've got God's in the midst of all this and everything. You know, he is doing things right, and he's doing the godly things and that, but he's got a problem. But he kept his eyes on God, and he never, what, stopped loving his wife, even as Christ loves the church, and that he loved her no matter what she did. He loved her, and no matter what kind of sins that she was involved, he loved her, even to the point he had to buy her back after she was a used piece of merchandise. Now, the feminists don't like that, probably that last comment, but that's all right. It communicates. She was a used piece of merchandise, and he went and purchased her as the Savior purchases us because of his pure love, as Christ loves the church. So in our marriages, and with that illustration of this whole mystery of Christ and the church and husbands' love for wives and wives' submission to their husbands, in the midst of all of this, what's at stake? Well, the testimony of Christ, the purity of the home, and the next generation of truth. And exactly what does this world believe about what is marriage? And whoa, do we have a problem there. So tonight, the need for this series, that there's a confusion over what marriage is. There's high divorce rate among Christians, equal to the world. And we've talked about how that some of those statistics can be skewed, but it still boils down to the fact that there's an awful high divorce rate among Christians who ought not to be getting a divorce. The absolute need for the church to be a strong church, it needs strong marriages. For the fact of strong marriages are necessary for the next generation, for the youth of the church, that young people within a local church ought to look at the husbands here tonight and the husbands that were here this morning and to say, that's what a godly man looks like. So that that one of our teenagers could look at any man, married man in this church and to say, that is a godly man. That's how I need to grow up. And that's how I need to treat my wife. That's how I need to speak to her. That's how I need to care for her. That's how I need to love her. Just as the young ladies in the church ought to be able to look at the women of the church, not only their moms, but the women of the church, and says, that's the kind of woman that I want to be. That's the kind of woman I want my daughter to grow up to be. Because this living illustration of marriage is intrinsic into the health of the local church. And so when people go, so if there's a problem within a marriage, and when the pastor shows up, or if the wife calls, we need help, and all of this, and you go in and try and give godly counsel, and they say, you don't have any right to stick your nose into our business. Excuse me? I have every right. Because your lousy marriage is bringing down the testimony of our church. Now you may stop, and hence, that's the reason why, that if it gets bad enough, you take a sinning spouse, even in the realm of ultimate sin, and you then even, this is a good cause for church discipline. Some people say, well, that's not right. You can't do that. Yes, we can. And we have every right. Because there's something that is missing there. And that is this concept that's going to be key in our first point tonight. And that is the issue of submission. People don't get it. We are to be submissive people. Christians are not going to go on, I got my rights. You can't tell me what to do. Because you see, it becomes quite clear in the text. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands, and husbands, love your wives. But then who is, and then that the husband is the head of the wife as who? Christ is the head of the church. And who does the husband bow to? The husband bows to Christ. And he needs to submit. In our text tonight, before he even gets into the whole idea of wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands. Verse 21, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. So submission is a key element. Not only is it husbands love, wives submit. It's the idea of mutual submission. Isn't that kind of interesting? The concept of what we've already seen of companionship. How that a wife completes her husband. If a man is not properly loving his wife, not only is he not loving himself properly, but he is forsaking the very missing element that God took out of him and gave back to him. And he's basically thumbing his nose at God when men abuse their wives. And I don't just mean that physically. If they do not treat that special woman that God has given to him in a godly way, you are missing out on the very thing that God has given you to help make you a godly and holy man. Holy, not only H-O, but W-H. Because every man's missing something. It's not the rib, but it's missing of what that rib represents. And that's why the companionship concept is so important. So for these, for the testimony of Christ, these are reasons why this kind of a series is necessary in these kinds of things. There is a danger in marriage, and we got to blow the horn on this kind of thing so that everyone hears it. That biblical roles in contemporary marriages, biblical roles of the husband and wife are either reversed, abused, or ignored. What a shame. That marital love does not develop into true intimacy. I confess, you know, as I, you know, we were married. I was 22, she was 20. We're born on the same day, so I can't say, you know, who's, you know, to the day, I'm 2 years older. And so we dated. She was a sophomore in high school. And I was a senior. And then through college, and then right before seminary, we went off to get married. We got married, and then we went off to seminary. And so, yeah, I get this right. I'm trying to get way ahead of myself. And so we went, and we went on, and I remember back in those days when they were talking about, oh, you're so young. I'm thinking, young? I want to get started. I want to be married. I want to be complete. I want to get involved in the ministry. I want to tackle life. And I don't want to do that by myself. And so I had this wife, this woman that God had given to me, and it was exciting. I didn't know everything together, everything about her, but as we grew and out of a genuine love, the concept is you love, and that's a command, by the way. It's not if she's still lovely or, you know, as long as her hair is still the same color as when you married her, or, you know, how many wrinkles and what Noxzema does to you. I think Noxzema probably gives you cancer. I don't know, and it smells that bad. Anyways, you know, you have that. Some of them said, what's Noxzema? Well, you just count your blessings. You know, that, you know, you just, in one sense, I say this in jest to prove a point, but I say this as a fact. You're married until you're dead, and you don't get out of it any other way. And so we're committed. Even if I made a mistake, I'm committed to this thing, and you're stuck together. Stuck on you, a song says. I think that's great. I can't think of a better place to be stuck of God's gift of one of his daughters to me. Wow. And so you have this concept of love. And when you're young, you're stupid. You don't know everything. And I'm afraid this generation, they wait to keep postponing marriage because they think they want to understand it more. It's better to get married stupid and then just be committed to it and grow. And as you grow together, you become more intimate. We used to say back in the day, I don't know if they still use this word now, is, you know, love versus infatuation. I don't know, when I see infatuation, I think of somebody's weight. But that's another thing too. Infatuation, it's, you know, the idea you're just caught up in, oh, they're a 10. Oh, she's so beautiful. What does the Bible say? That beauty's vain, it's vanity, it's emptiness. That's all going to change in her and in you. And so that's not where you wrap it up. It's wrapped up in love. Love that's unconditional, and especially for Christians. Now, God in common grace gives good marriages to even the reprobate. People that are just disgusting in their sin. But they can have a great marriage because there's some basic principles. But this is true as a godly marriage is to properly understand that love grows into intimacy. Intimacy is when there comes a closeness. And that's really, if you have to pick one word for marriage, it would be oneness, isn't it? The two become one. That is just lost in today's world. That's the reason why, you know, you can't have same-sex oneness. Yeah, it just doesn't work. It's just contrary to the whole, that's not it. But within Christians, they would just say, well, this is a physical attraction. But is that all it is? Is that the most important thing? Is that included? Yes, but even in the picture, it's the idea of unity that comes into intimacy. I like to illustrate that we have this thing called interpersonal relationships. I remember at Wright State University studying to be a veterinarian, and I took this course. It was one of those things when I changed education, it was one of those empty-minded courses as far as I was concerned. And I talked about interpersonal relationships. Oh, we got to learn how to relate to one another. Like, I want to go to college to tell me how to relate to people. But they talked about interpersonal relationships and how you relate to the opposite sex, how you relate to the same sex, and all that kind of thing. And they talked about this barrier. And this was one of the things. That's probably about the only thing I got good out of that class. But, you know, we all have this barrier. And the barrier that we maintain a distance. And so we shake hands or that kind of thing, and there's this distance. But then those that we love, you know, and when you're dating, then you begin to break that barrier down, and you can hug. And then when you think about it, the young people here will think this is really gross. But, you know, when you break down the stuff and you're breaking down the barriers of this relationship and this distance between you and the other person, then you start putting your lips on each other's mouths, you know, and kissing. Ooh. But the idea there is there's a progression in your knowledge, in your relationship, that you're becoming more intimate, but you're getting closer. That ultimately that climaxes into the oneness of marriage. The problem in today's world, everyone is seeking the intimacy by way of a physical attraction, and they have no concept of what the love is all about. Because we are breaking down God's order of things. So biblical roles and the concept of love and marriage are abused, reversed, or ignored. Marital love does not develop into true intimacy in so many marriages today. Now, here's a good one, and we're going to spend some time on this into the future. But another, probably the one of the most important elements of marriage is communication. What he said is not what I heard. You know, I'm not so sure what you heard is what I meant. And it goes back and forth. And you just, you know, and you break down what the, you know, when a wife says something like that, he says, well, I'd like to go fishing. And she wants to take him shopping. And he says, well, you know, well, come on, I'd like for you to go shopping with me. And he says, oh, well, I was thinking of going fishing. And she says, oh, well, I suppose. And he says, oh, okay, good. And he goes. And he comes home. I can't believe you went fishing. I told you not. No, she didn't. She said, you knew I wanted to go shopping and I wanted you to go with me. And I can't. And they see, now we have an argument. And by the way, that illustration does not come from Danielle and Rich. Saved ya. Okay, so you see, that is the thing, you know, but see what, if you don't want him to go fishing, then tell him that. Well, I didn't want to hurt him. Now you're going to have more of a problem because people don't say what they really mean. And when you're talking about a sense of an intimate couple, that a close couple, that they, the communication breaks down. There's supposed to be an openness, a love that is truthful. You know, bearing a false witness is a sin, whether it's a husband and wife talking to each other or it's a bold-faced lie that the government says or a politician says. You know, it's all wrong. So be upfront, be real, and be the person and love them no matter what. So the lack of communication is a danger of marriage. A lack of time spent together. I can't tell you how much this is a problem. Among the millennial generation, and they all want to be together and that kind of thing, sometimes I think that's a real danger. When they want to spend more time with friends than they do with their own spouse. That is not a biblical marriage. You're supposed to be spending some time, spend your time and bulk of your time and communication and everything else with your spouse. Personal needs are fulfilled away from the family. There's a real problem when a wife who's working, and I'm not opposed to working wives, I am if it destroys the home, but if they're working and she's getting more praise from her boss than from her husband, you have a problem. Guys, when she gets more recognition at her work than she does at home, you have a problem. You see, her self-worth is now being met somewhere else. You have a problem. There's the idea of that when a problem and a danger point in marriage is when vows are considered conditional. I promise to love you until I find someone prettier. I promise to love you as long as you look good. I promise to love you as long as you meet all of my needs. They're not conditional. When self is put over the spouse, and that becomes quite clear, you sacrifice yourself in marriage. You are no longer your own. The two become one. You have a unified identity. And so these are the things and these concepts are the danger points. When we come to this first topic now of what marriage is, which is a monogamous, heterosexual, one flesh, permanent relationship, that when marriage is considered in these things with these dangers in the backdrop, we need to consider this whole thing of the things that Paul mentions in Ephesians chapter 5. With that as the backdrop, the idea of submitting ourselves one to another in the fear of the Lord. That's the first one. There is a principle within marriage of mutual submission. There's an old Indiana law. I can't believe they wrote it this way, but they did. An old Indiana law that says when two cars approach an intersection, each must wait until the other has passed. Yeah, that's just about how men and women, some husbands and wives, handle an argument. This is not over until I win. And that'll happen over my dead body. Well, I guess that'll take some time, but I'm going to win no matter what. What is that? You know, that when the goal is more about winning an argument than it is, husbands, love your wives. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands. In Galatians chapter 3 and verse 28, it does talk about there's no more, you know, the bond and free, male and female and everything. That's not about our unity in Christ. But within a marriage, there is to be an order. And Paul then approaches that in 1 Timothy chapter 2 when he talks about how that why women are, and he says there that why women are to remain silent in the church. And he goes on to say, because the woman fell first, then the man, she was deceived. And so it does talk about, it goes all the way back to the creation mandate. And this is the order that I have to confess that I don't always fully get it, but hey, this is what God said, not me. That because she was deceived and not Adam, and because she fell first and not Adam, that she is not to do these things. So there was something about that in the order of the fall that God said, okay, from this time forward, this is how the home has got to be ordered in a fallen world. And when families seek to disobey God's word, it's nothing more than raising the fist in God's face and saying, I don't want to do it your way. Yet he has given marriage for the flourishing of mankind. But we don't want it God's way. And so the principle of mutual submission is so, so important. And it's to be done in fear, with respect, and honor. The Puritans, in the midst of all of this, they would always talk about what has to happen first before we approach this idea of submission. And I found this quite interesting as I'm reading this book on the Puritans and Puritan marriage. And listen to what they had to say. They said, Puritans refer to the marriage and the submission as, quote, yoke pulling. Now, we are really removed from this. Even I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, inner city, and I didn't have that. But, you know, a yoke. You have a beast of burden, and there's a yoke that they put on them. And so sometimes if you had like a wagon that you were going to pull, and you wanted horses, but let's use oxen just for sake of a neater illustration. You have two oxen that you're going to do, good, strong, and you would put a yoke on them. And there would be this yoke, and you put that over the oxen's shoulders, basically, and strap it onto them. And they would pull together, and it would be working together. And that's how they referred to this mutual submission. It's the idea of that there is a sense of equality, the Galatians chapter 3 passage, but it's the idea of that we're pulling together in these kinds of areas. Now, it was interesting that the Puritans, if you've done much reading in them, boy, they're wordy. And they have all kinds of things. And so there's a lot more to all of this, but they did boil it down into five areas of yoke pulling. When you come together and you pull together in mutual submission. And this is what the Puritans said. Number one, that is the mutual care of each other's bodies. Now, I thought, wow, these are Puritans? Woo, you know, that's kind of racy. But what they meant by that is, you go on and read, it's the mutual care of each other's bodies, such as sickness. Like if the husband's at work, the wife's at home, she gets a cold, she doesn't feel good, and he comes home and he gets ticked at her because she doesn't have his dinner ready. And I just want to say, get a life. Go cook it yourself. You know, and that's probably what she's saying to him, and then it blows up. And it's the right response. It's, well, she's a woman, submit to me, and you do. No, it's the idea of being supportive with the woman's body. And so you read that in other places, whether it be with respect to physical intimacies, that you only come apart for a short season, lest Satan come in and tempt you. And so the idea is what authority has the woman over her own body? None but her husband. And what authority does the husband have over his own body? None but the wife. And we live in a day and age where says, well, that just doesn't sound right. That's scripture. And so there is a mutual submission in the idea of the realm of this mutual care of each other's bodies. We reflect that over in sickness and in health. You know, rich and poor, you know, sickness and in health. It's the idea there is it actually comes from a puritanical kind of a concept. Secondly, the Puritans said this yoke pulling involves the care for the name and reputation of the family. Now, they go on and they discuss what that means. And this is something that seems to be really lost, but it's the honor of the family name. That's why, you know, the wife in submission takes on her husband's name. And she does that to identify to him and to arrange herself, which is what the term to submit means. She arranges herself underneath her husband and has her identity in his family name. But then it's the family name and the honor of the family. And the reason for that is that it avoids weakness. A husband should not go around talking about his wife and her weakness. Yeah, my wife, she offers burnt sacrifice every meal. Shame on you. My husband, he is, you know, he does. When you have that sort of thing, I remember in my first church that there was a situation, it was a young couple, and we were having a meeting, a Sunday school picnic at one of the deacon's farms, and he had a big pond and everything. I was around when I was 30, because at 30, I took up the sport of springboard diving. And so I was practicing diving every chance that I got. And so I was diving on he had a board and to this pond. And so I was practicing my springboard diving during the picnic and everything. And one of it was actually a deacon's wife, and come up and she said, would you teach me to dive? And I said, I will, with your husband's permission. And she said, oh, it doesn't mean, I said, with your husband's permission. So, oh, okay. And so he comes up there. And he said, oh, yeah, that's fine. So I took her out on the board, and I'm showing her how to do this thing and showing her how to dive and everything and how to do a back dive and so forth. And so we were practicing there. Well, the husband just thought he'd be kind of a goofball. He was kind of a goofy guy anyways. A little fact you need to know, he was a cookie salesman, and he ate a lot of the profits. And so he decided to do a big cannonball. And so he runs while we're out there, and I'm trying to get her to make little splash as possible, doing a back dive and this whole kind of thing. And he goes running off, and he says, "Diver coming!" You know, well, it was a very splashy dive. I'll just put it that way. And as soon as he came up, in the presence of all the people at the Sunday school picnic, she said to him, "Way to go, Blimpo. Thanks for leaving some water in the pond." And I looked at her and I said, "You give him an apology right now and do it loudly, or we're done." You see, that's not fitting and proper. To be cutting and say a derogatory mark against this person that you are now one with, that is just wrong. And yet, you know, those kinds of things go on all the time, and we're probably all a little guilty on that. That if a husband is truly loving his wife, he's not going to point out her weaknesses. There's no perfect woman here. Well, almost none. Love you. No, she's not perfect either. But have you ever heard me say something against her? Mm-mm. Never will. And so you see, the idea there is that there's this mutual submission. But as it says here, the care, a mutual care of the bodies, but it's also care for the name and reputation of each one. It's not your job to be pronouncing all the weaknesses of your spouse. Now, I can think of a person here at church that you would think that his wife would never missed anything that she ever cooked. Or that she, you know, and they're just always, you know, all this kind of. And isn't it true that when you hear someone constantly refer to their wife and we go, you know, the lovey-dovey thing, oh, there they are, the lovebirds, oh, you know, get a room. And so what's wrong with that? What's wrong with public displays of affection, of holding hands? Now, you also have to realize that there are other arrangements that sometimes it doesn't work. Some of you know I do not open my wife's door when we go into a car. And that goes all the way back to our teenage days, because we have always led such fast-paced lives that if I open her door and have to walk around, it will be late to half the places we go. And she is fully capable of opening her own door. And it isn't a lack of respect. It's by mutual agreement. And so we just do that. So you have to understand some of that is couched in a mutual understanding of each other. Well, the Puritans and this yoke pulling have a third thing. It's pulling the yoke that is, thirdly, in home government. Woe be when one of those little sinners that God gives you, we call them children, and they enter the home and he does something bad and the dad says something and then that little sinner goes to mom and tries to get mom to say something besides what the dad said. That's called splitting the parents. No. Husband and wives are one. And that little sinner will be used of Satan and of their own sin nature to split that oneness. And we've all heard it. We've probably all done it. And we all hated it when our parents, the other parents said, well, what did your father say? What did your mother say? Oh, man. Unless you were bold enough to actually tell a lie. That'll get you in bigger trouble. Not that I would know, but that I've just heard that that'll get you into really big trouble. Because, you see, in home government, or woe be to the home where the husband wants to spank and the wife doesn't. You need to get those things figured out. Because that's going to cause tension. Home government. Home government with respect to where you're going to go to church. I love this one. We're not going to take our kid to church. We're going to let them, when they get older, decide. Oh, come on. Al Mohler was talking about in the briefing that there's actually a school in Louisville, Kentucky, that is allowing the children on the school board and determine the length of the days, the courses covered, and lets them choose whether they want to do any grading or not. May I just profess to you, that is insanity and stupidness on steroids. This kid is not the one ruling this house. First of all, it is the husband. is the head of the home, and he determines what goes on in that home and what doesn't go on. He determines those things, and wife in submission is to support those things. And so one of the acts of submission in that is he leads in leadership and she submits to that. But they're mutually governing in the home. And the children need to be able to see that, to see mom and dad praying together, to see that mom and dad cannot be split in the home ranks, in home government, that there is a oneness in possessions. Now, I will confess that I do have a monkey fund. You know, for our visitors, I breed monkeys, I'm kind of phasing that out, but I've got monkeys and snakes and alligators and crocodiles, and I have a special fund that, savings account that I maintain, and my wife does too, but it's for accounting purposes. You know, yesterday she deposited some money, and she can take it out, you know, really, that's fine, she's on as co-beneficiary, or whatever you call it, and she can access that, it's more of an accounting kind of a thing. But woe be to those who separate their assets. That's one of my main concerns, and to be really upfront with you, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that when couples get married later in life, they sometimes want to keep their assets separate. Well, look, if the person that you're marrying, if you can't become one in all different ways, you need to reconsider that marriage. And I understand the practicalities of it and the whole inheritance thing. I mean, I get it. I get that. But I also get what marriage is. And this mutual yoke pulling has to do with the oneness in possessions. And then mutual helpfulness to care in times of sickness and in health. To take and to be there in the raising of children. To be there in the name and the community and what is the representation of what the testimony for Christ is really going to be. To realize you cannot sin and not affect your spouse nor your family, because you're in this together. Men who want to go and find something, some other person, or a wife who lives a wild life, you are not free to do that. That goes against all of what marriage truly is all about. So that was what the Puritans said. Before we even get to wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands. That's not to say she is just, you know, a rug. No, they are mutually submitting themselves one to another, as what the text says in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 21. Submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God, that applies to the church, but also applies to men and women within the church, and as he goes on, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands in context. There is a mutual submission in the yoke pulling of a marriage. But when, as it were, push comes to shove, wives yield. And he goes on to use the illustration in this particular thing of submission, because there's an issue of submission, of headship, and of mutual respect. That a husband should always maintain a respectable attitude so that the wife doesn't have a hard time doing that. Now, in 1 Peter chapter 3, obviously our time is gone tonight, so this is by way of introduction on just the mutual submission. But in 1 Peter chapter 3, it talks about, okay, well, what do you do if you don't have a believing husband or a believing wife? We'll approach that issue. Now, a believer should not enter in that kind of a relationship. That's why Christians dating and marrying non-Christians, it's just wrong. But what do you do if one of them gets saved and the other one doesn't, at least for a while? Well, the Bible addresses that particular issue. And it does talk about still submission. And it is all about, as Christ showed submission and as Christ loved, and it's the idea of, it's your testimony for God. So just as a beginning message concerning the wives and the husbands and that kind of thing, we have this concept now with this whole idea. I use the Puritans and their fivefold yoke pulling as an illustration, but submitting yourselves one to another. And when you have now wives, submit yourselves unto your husbands. Again, there is this idea with the backdrop that there's equality, but there does come this idea that when the wife arranges herself underneath the headship of her husband, now that's tough for a woman, and it is because of the curse, by the way. And the reason why that's so bad is because she has to submit to a sinner. Because every man, every husband is a sinner. It's part of the bad perks of a marriage. It's just intrinsic in the system. But that makes the husband the head and also responsible ultimately to God. And so husbands, hence I come back. If there's a problem in the home, yeah, it's your problem. Now, you may not be the cause of it, you may be, but that's something that you need to really take seriously before God as you prepare for a God-fearing marriage. Well, that's an intro. We'll come back next week. We'll continue on this particular thing and to look at wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands, this concept of mutual submission, or not mutual submission, but the issue of submission, the issue of headship, and then the issue of respect that's also found in this text. Would you stand with me tonight as we close? Our Father in heaven, I pray and ask that you would give us godly marriages. And Father, we confess that we all come short at times. But Father, our heart's desire, I trust of those that are here tonight, is to have a God-honoring marriage so that we may not only hear with respect to our Christianity, but with respect to our marriages, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Father, help these men love their wives for those of us that are married. Help the young people to understand, and those not married, that this is something that they must strive for because of the Word of God. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands and what that means. But there is a mutual together working for the glory of God within a marriage. Father, use us for your glory. May it be demonstrated by our domestic lives, and we will praise you for the privilege. In Jesus' name.